to GalacticConnection.com, one of the most popular blogs on the World Wide Web today for alternative news. Stay tuned for the latest information on our world shift from enslavement to galactic involvement, as well as current intel on any blockages impeding us from our sovereign birthright. Knowledge and self-mastery are key at this time. Our commitment is to present you with the latest breaking conspiratorial articles, off-world messages, exopolitics, cutting-edge technologies and sciences, and also an ever-significant intertwining of spiritual support and metaphysical scope that one needs to dive down the rabbit hole in search for truth with balance. We are truly on the horizon of a new golden age filled with the promise for more love, worldwide peace, and accelerated intuitive skills, where every living being can exist in cohesion and abundance. It is whatever we envision and dream this new world to be. I say to you now, let's redefine the new world to the beginnings of our own precious heaven on earth. Galactic Connection is here to provide the pulse of Mother Earth through an eclectic range of interviews each Tuesday afternoon from 3 to 4:55 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, Station 2 on BBS Radio, expanding your perspectives on how we can once and for all take back our freedoms, our joy, and our connection with our mighty I Am presence. Our intention remains true to connect hearts and minds everywhere in order to obtain global unity and galactic and universal acceptance. Our discussions will continue to cover anything to do with galactic society and our involvement with our galactic brothers and sisters. Our guests are experts in their fields, and our radio shows have been coined as some of the most thought-provoking out there. In addition to our daily blog, which runs 365 days a year, we also offer a realm of healing services such as our world-renowned implant removal processes, our spiritual past life clearings, our galactic violet ray alchemy from Alexandra, who shares in the lineage of Merlin, and other cutting-edge healing technologies. Check our site out at galacticconnection.com now. Sending you a wave of light, love, and inspiration, and a personal hug and thank you for listening to our Galactic Connection radio show and visiting our blog today. Hi everyone, this is Alexandra Metters of GalacticConnection.com, and this is a pre-recorded interview for June 7th, 2016. I'm going to be interviewing Adam Apollo today, and we're going to be covering topics such as the Holy Grail, the Round Table, anything to do with kind of carrying on the trail of information from the time of Camelot, and how that applies with the metaphysics and the knowledge of today. So hopefully you are following this sequence. If you haven't started from the very first one, I highly advise you do so. And you can find that at the Galactic Connection YouTube channel. Just go to youtube.com/Galactic Connection and you will see all the other interviews that Adam Apollo and I have been doing. We're going to continue to keep this going as long as we feel it is necessary. So for those of you who are not familiar with Adam, he's a galactic ambassador and an Earth emissary, laying an early foundation for his life purpose. He was a graduate in presentations in high school, focusing on bridging science and spirituality through the integration of advanced physics, including loop quantum gravity, string theory, quantum mechanics, and relativity. This is in high school, guys. During his studies at the University of North Carolina, he also features integrative research into astrophysics, philosophy, cultural anthropology, and psychology. He has held counsel with indigenous elders around the world in private fire ceremonies, helped to organize 2 prayer runs for world peace across the North American continent, and has smoked the white buffalo peace pipe passed down 19 generations from the white buffalo calf woman. You can go ahead and visit his site and just Google the Guardian Alliance Academy, and you'll find all kinds of really cool stuff there. You can also reach it on the GalacticConnection.com website. It is in, I believe, the right-hand column. You can just click it right there. So before we dive into the interview with him, I just want to remind everyone that the energies are really heightening, okay? Things are really getting amped up in a big way. So as much as I can definitely attest to the fact that there have been phenomenal victories, and I mean really groundbreaking victories in the last couple of weeks, I would also like to remind all of you to continue holding space, of staying in that neutral position, remembering that all of this information will trigger a lot of past ancient stuff. We need to remember not to just look at ourselves as an individual. Many of us are holding a group soul consciousness reality, and therefore we are being called to clear a lot of that group soul trauma and anything to do with clearing deleterious things that are preventing us from getting into the new timeline. So remember that. I had an incident with myself yesterday that was very, very, let's just say, violent and upsetting. And I had to step back and say, okay, this is for me not only to transmute and to dissipate, but try to remember to make sure I come from a state of compassion. I do want to remind everyone that ultimately all of us, there are so many factions around the internet, in the conspiracy community, in the ufology community, in this even the spirituality community, where we all really ultimately want the same thing, which is to bring forward peace and harmony and unity and really truly living with Mother Earth. I mean, what a fantastic dream as well as intention and vision that is. And we are already creating that. We need to realize that we're already in the midst of it in the now. And the reason I say that is because there are so many of us that become very zealous in our desires to attain certain agendas, certain intentions, certain goals and gleams. And we lose sight of the ultimate solution, which is making sure that we accept and allow other people to do the same type of thing, especially if their intention is pure. So as much as it may not resonate with us, the way in which they went about doing it, it does not take away from the validity and the decency of that individual pursuing a higher cause. So I just wanted to share that just from an experience I had. And again, I want to remind everyone, please look at the pyramid building widget on the website. It is really important. Two things I especially call out to the guardians who are masters of grid building and taking care of the grids and holding the space of the nodes and communicating with the crystals and everything to do with timelines. That is one of our main efforts, one of our main talents, what we've brought to the table for the planet. Don't forget that. So no matter what you're doing, where you're working, make it fun. Make it be about something that you can turn it into a victory. I just had a gentleman, I don't think he'll mind, I just had a gentleman, we had a kind of a consult the other day, and he works for a company that has everything to do with oil. And I saw what he's here to do. It was a light bulb going off for him, recognizing the fact that this was not just a job about going to and from work and doing his responsibility of, you know, maybe marketing or administration or what have you, but it was also far deeper than that, actually connecting with Mother Earth, spreading a light quotient amongst this kind of denser part of the corporate world, and also getting in touch with the areas in which the oil was being pumped and providing Mother Earth gratitude and a fulfillment in giving back to her, which, you know, look at how many oil wells we have all over even just the United States. What are we giving her back? We're constantly pulling oil out. What are we doing back for her? So he's all excited because he now sees a new purpose with his corporate job. And I'm sharing this because I really feel it's very important for all of you to remember Remember what I said in my last interview. Many times we're being placed in corporate positions to collect intel, to actually do some very higher callings through that conduit, whether we are really thrilled about it or not. So keep that in mind. Hopefully that helps you with the mundane of why am I stuck in a job. Folks, a lot of times you're there to be a whistleblower. You're there to bring forth the integrity. You're there to call somebody on their lack of integrity. You're there to blow in, perhaps, create a peaceful scenario and blow out. So let it happen. Just allow it to unfold. This is very different times. We have to create new paradigms as to how we interact with the information that comes into our life and our channel. A lot of times it's not that comfortable, but remember, this is what we're learning. We're learning to just kind of be much more malleable and adaptable without all the shoulds and coulds and woulds. Okay? So again, pat yourself on the back. We're doing an awesome job and we have had phenomenal victories. And the powers that were, they know that. So stay tuned for this amazing interview with Adam Apollo. Thanks. Hi, everyone. I have Adam Apollo with me today, and I hope you're enjoying our series as much as I think we are. Just to be able to bring the mythology and the archetypes and the hidden mysteries within your own DNA to enlighten us all in seeing this reality in a completely more complex way. And I can't think of any other person to do this type of work with than Adam. He's just got such an amazing perspective on things. And you know how I am? I like to look at all the perspectives. So Adam has really been gifted with this, with his own background. And I thought today he and I would discuss the Holy Grail and maybe some other affiliated topics that kind of intertwine with the whole Camelot theme and so on and so forth. I have been receiving some really cool emails. People are really getting activated by these interviews, really starting to have memories. And, you know, maybe like just a millisecond even is good, guys. You know, it doesn't have to be a whole minute. Just be happy that you're starting to remember who you really are. But, you know, I think what I want to first do is just give Adam a little bit of airtime here for the amazing work he's doing. He's throwing it is so unique gathering in Germany, and it's called Sword and the Chalice. And I thought maybe perhaps you could kind of open it up with that. We will have a link so people can click right on it and go right to the website. But if I had the time, I'd be there. I was reading the descriptions. I mean, listen to this. Now, you tell me if this isn't resonating to your core. Return of the Round Table. Hello, everybody knows I'm all about that. Restore Circles of Avalon. Emerge Leadership of Earth. Have Chalice of Potential and recognize that Chalice of Potential. And going into the Knights and the Priestesses, which is essentially all the view that are listening to this interview. So tell us a little more about it, because it's just beautiful when I went up there and read it.
Yeah, I've been very excited about this event and in the process of generating it and looking at all of the pieces and the kinds of activities and experiences that we can cultivate at this place. It's at a castle outside of Berlin, about 2 hours outside of Berlin, that's owned by a friend of mine. It just has absolutely exquisite grounds. It's a truly magical place. And we've been really excited in cultivating this event, but it's interesting because while the response has been massive from every person that's seen it, every person that we know is excited and wishes they could go. But there actually hasn't been the amount of registrations that we need to even throw the event yet. So We've been giving it a little bit more time and extending it a little bit, you know, to decide whether or not we're going to do it at this original planned date or postpone it until later in the year. So for anybody who's watching this interview, one of two things may happen. If you go to swordinthechalice.com and you see it there and you want to register right away, great. But wait a few more days before buying a flight if you're flying there or going to be traveling there, because we're going to announce before the 10th, we will announce whether or not we're going to do the event during this, you know, July 4th weekend, or we're going to postpone it. My hope is that we do it because, you know, it's been a building of momentum and it's going to be an absolutely amazing training. I'm going to dive into, you know, all the different components of what I've done in Jedi training intensives, but also really focusing on global leadership and focusing on what it takes to create a distributed global governance system and a real roundtable where people are meeting in an equal way, learning from each other and co-creating together. And we're going to have a costume party on Saturday night that will, you know, be full of all these people from around Europe who are into cosplay and Victorian arts and Gothic Renaissance type stuff. And so even if it doesn't happen the first few days of July, which at this point, like I said, if we don't have a huge wave of registrations in the next couple days, we may move it back. We will still be doing this event. We just want to maybe, it's possible it's not quite the right timing and we just need to rearrange it and put it in a better time slot. So
what is Adam, what does it look like as far as the general price range of a ticket from here to Berlin?
Well, it depends. If you're coming from North America, there, sometimes the Berlin flights tend to be more expensive than flights to somewhere else nearby where you can then take a train or a short flight. We have a travel page on the website, swordinthechalice.com, which basically covers tips from whichever continent you're flying from. So I've found that the best flights from North America actually go to Oslo, Norway, and then you take a short jump from Oslo down to Berlin. And because flights direct to Berlin, you know, they're like $1,500, maybe $1,600, okay, you know, something like that.
Okay. And your stay at the castle, which includes food, yeah, right, and all, yeah, accommodations and everything, it's still, yeah, really reasonable.
Yeah, definitely.
But this is kind of, this is like a life-changing experience, folks. And for anybody who hasn't been to Europe, it's my favorite place on the planet. Literally. I did 63 days on the Eurail passes by foot when I was 21, and just cruised to 12 different countries, stayed in castles as bed and breakfasts, and also the youth hostels that I used to crash in. When you're in college and you've got like a $25 a day budget, you know, you gotta do things really. But I have to say, for those of you who really want to have like a push in the right direction of where you're really going to get led on your purpose and path, I can honestly say I'm looking at this again and saying, I'll take a look at it again, because it's screaming at me that I feel like I should be there, and as well as finally meet you in person, you know.
Yeah, that would be lovely.
Yeah, it would be nice. I mean, we're definitely on the same path as far as what we want to accomplish, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, if you jump in there and register now, we might hit the numbers, and if we don't, you might show up on the site and it'll just say postpone until this date. Anybody who's registered already can either have a full refund or we'll just keep their registration for the next round. Either way, this is starting a chain of events. And, you know, I've been contacted by a group out of Malta as well that want me to come and do a spiritual leadership and training tour at a series of castles across Malta.
Wow.
And so I've been studying some of the roots of these castles and where they came from. And a lot of these castles and the hub in particular, where the event would sort of culminate, are old Templar castles.
I was just going to ask you that.
So it seems appropriate that out of the blue, I'm going to be called by somebody to come and do events at these Templar castles down there. And
oh my God.
So it's just getting going. So, you know, if you can or can't make this event, or if we do or don't do it in July, don't worry. There's going to be a lot of other events coming up, and we will, obviously, if you come and, you know, get on the list at Guardian Alliance, we'll share through that.
Sure.
And Alexandra, of course, I'll share with you links to any of the events we do that I'd love for you to share with your network. So.
Oh, God, and I would love to go. And in fact, I have been called to a specific location in Europe. I know I need to go there for many reasons, multidimensionally. Mm. And so I'm kind of realizing that this is probably the link for that. Mm. But anyway, everybody, check it out. If you are able to make the time and really just go in and open yourself up as a vessel to receive the funds, if this is meant to be, because it'll happen. We really are struggling right now to recognize that the light is supporting our passions, especially when they're aligned with a planetary perception. You know, if you're really focusing on passions and it's not all about money, and it's not all about your fame and glory, but it's more about how you really legitimately want to bring this state of life back to balance, you're going to get supported big time.
Yeah.
You know? Now, question, the castle that it's going to be thrown in now, you know, was that a Templar castle too? What's the history behind that?
This castle is, it's a little bit more of a Nordic Germanic architecture. So you don't have as many like crenellations and arrow slit holes. It's meant much more to be, sort of the relaxing palace, you know, summer palace that you go to where, you know, you're not having to deal with conflict and stuff like that. So,
right.
It's less built for war and more built for peace and for enjoyment. And, it's a beautiful place. There's images of it. I have a whole gallery about it on the website, under the venue link. Its history is interesting. There's, if you look up the name online, you can find a lot of different old photos of it. They have a Facebook page. It's called Schloss Heinrichshorst, which is, means Castle Heinrichshorst, and it's pretty amazing. It's an amazing place, and it's actually been a school at different times. At one point, it became a school for kids, and you can just imagine, being a kid and you're going to school at the castle, you know, out in the country. Like, let's go, you know. It's like, well, I will definitely do that.
Life's really tough, isn't it? You know,
yeah.
It's funny. I just got a hit because I traveled with a friend of mine when I was doing my URL pass trip. And on the road, and we were, you know, backpacking it. And he was going nuts. He kept saying, "Do we have to go to one more castle?" I said, "I have to go to castles. Okay, I have to go to every castle. I went to like every castle and every Catholic church known to mankind."
Yeah.
It didn't matter where I was going. And now I realize it's all like this Templar connection, you know?
Sure.
Too much. Yeah. Too funny. Wow. Well, anyway, everybody, check it out. I think you'll be really impressed. He's done, of course, an exquisite job of presenting what he's going to be covering. And there's going to be training and education and really, in my opinion, stimulating your DNA to step into who you really are. because that's truly where we're at. We're at a crossroads. We're really needing everybody to get into that place. And I think where everyone feels they're stuck is they're still in that 3D survival. I've got to do my job. But I can speak from testimony that in those early days when I started Galactic Connection, and I was barely able to feed myself, let alone pay my own bills. And I thought I was going to get evicted and that kind of thing. You know, I just kept, I kept that fear away. I just focused on what I wanted to do. And I knew that if I was doing the right thing, that I was going to get supported. And I did finally, you know, so keep the faith, everyone. It's happening. So anyway, so my first question out the gate, Mr. Adam, is what do you feel is the difference between the Holy Grail and the Holy Chalice?
The Holy Grail and the Holy Chalice. Well, you know, there's, it's funny when you look at the Grail and you look at a chalice, you know, and really consider the deeper meaning, ramification, purpose of this thing, you know. Let me just grab something over here. You know, we often think of this cup, right? And a lot of our experience through history and through media is looking at the Grail as this object that was this magical special object which, you know, caught the blood of Christ and was transformed in some way to being able to impart upon the person who has it or the person who drinks it eternal life. You know, it's the idea of water as eternal life is a concept that goes back ages and ages. And when you look at all the different ways that this concept has been translated, vampires, they drink blood and they live forever, right? The pool of eternal youth, you get inside of this pool and all of your cells are reborn and you can constantly come back to your, you know, to your youth. And many, many others, stories from many different cultures of this idea that there's some spring, wellspring of eternal life that's available. And yet all of them link back together to some of the same concept. And one is that there's a relationship between your blood and this water that is this eternal life, and that there's a connection there. Now, you know, in our bodies, what we experience is that when there is good blood flow, we have good health. In Tai Chi and Qigong, the practice is often using the mind intent to focus the Qi, and the Qi is, mobilizes then the army of the body.
Yeah.
So the energy field, controls the forces of the blood inside the body. And so wherever you direct your energy, that's where your blood is going to flow. Now, all of the circulation of blood in our bodies centralizes around one place in our body, and that's our heart. Our heart is the fundamental nexus point for all of the blood flow in our body, and really also for our lymphatic system and most of the water that's moving through our body and cleansing through our body as well. Because our main lymphatic drainage points, if you look at the lymphatic paths of the body, which are basically fluid pathways, they're like rivers. And what they do is they gather up different toxins in the body. When there's muscular adhesions and those get broken down and certain cells die off, it gathers those cells. And so these rivers are cleaning the whole body and bringing all the stuff from there up and then draining it through this place just under our collarbone here and on and here. And when that drainage happens, it's actually draining it straight into our heart.
Exactly.
And then what happens is that drainage goes into our heart, and then the heart spreads that through our bodies. And so as the lymphatic system is cleaning the rivers of our bodies, then those rivers then go into the heart, and the stuff's able to be spread around and be cleansed from the body through the power of the liver, mostly.
Yeah.
Because the liver then acts as a major catchment and cleaning source. Mm-hmm. So it's a way to circulate the energy in this relationship between the blood in our bodies and the water in our bodies, which actually is directly related to our longevity on a physical level. So that's the physical side of it. That's the physics and the science of this relationship inside of us. But there's also another key here, which is that a lot of these ideas, and even the idea of the heart itself as being a grail, and being able to reach a sort of resonance, a sort of coherence where, you know, you come into this vibrational state where you're able to continue life or able to be aware of your eternal life, is really essential. And there's a spiritual depth and a spiritual underlying truth here, which is that when the heart is fully awake and the heart is truly open, it forms a nexus point not only between your blood and the water in your body, your physical sensations, your emotional body, your mind and your mental body changes, but also your higher level spiritual bodies, your causal body, your etheric template, your spiritual body, your Akashic bodies, all of these parts of ourselves, all your lower chakras, all your upper chakras, they interconnect at this nexus point. And at the heart of this nexus point, so to speak, the heart of the heart, there is this metaphysical structure that's often talked about, which is sometimes called the soul seat, which is a direct link into your core star. And there's some meditation that Drunvalo Melchizedek, which many of you all know that name, has been leading for many, many years, 15 years, I think. I saw him in person in Asheville doing this meditation for the first time, which is about coming into this vortex in your heart, in your soul seat, and feeling yourself moving deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper into the heart until the point where you drop in to your soul star. You drop into your core essence, your core star, your soul, the nature of your soul. And this meditation of entering this deepest place in your heart, this core of your heart, which there are many, many forms of, Drunvalo's is just one of them, is accessing this wellspring of eternal life inside of you. Because the truth is the eternal life well is not out there. It's not in some cup. It's not in, you know, a certain place in the world. It's not something that can just be given to you. It's something that you have to find inside of yourself. And so the search for the Holy Grail is really the search for understanding our own infinite nature, our own longevity, our own true eternal life that is inside of us. Because once you drop in to that core of your heart and you really feel your soul nature, you experience an awareness that tells you that you cannot die, that your body can decay and rot and fall away, but you will not stop. You will not cease existing in that moment. It will pass as dust in the wind. The body will fall and go away, and you will still exist, and you may come and be born again. And this truth of our eternal nature is the truth of reincarnation, is the truth behind the secret of the blood, that our blood is not just based on the bloodline of our ancestry, but also the blood of our spiritual ancestry. Mm. Passing of our our lines on a spiritual level.
Good and clarification, Adam. So, thank you.
Yeah. And so for me, you know, understanding this wellspring of eternal life, you know, when I look back at Avalon, and I remember and look at the kinds of experiences that were happening at that time, what I see really clearly is that there was a time when people had gotten caught up, so caught up in the action of the time and what was happening now and the trauma and the intensity and, you know, the betrayal and the issues of the time, that what was lost was the eternal awareness, the memory, the realization that it doesn't really matter if we don't get everything done that we think we could do. In fact, you never will get everything done that you think that you can do in this life. You there will always be something more that you will create for yourself to do. And so while you feel that, and while you are pressing yourself to achieve and to make things happen and to get to the goals that you're trying to get to, and you're constantly striving and you're constantly achieving, but there's always more, you can get lost in the flow of the tactical must do right now. Mm-hmm. But it is essential to who we are and to our deeper spiritual nourishment that sometimes we just sit back and we remember all that we've done, and we allow ourselves the grace of realizing that there isn't actually a time crunch. We're not going to just run out of time. There may be urgency around any one specific task, but in the big picture, time is unfolding with its own perfect pattern and flow. And we can tap into that flow and that beauty and that coherence by accessing this deeper part of ourselves, by getting in touch with our eternal life within.
And it's just so similarly explaining that the journey itself is what we've lost sight of. You know, I was just talking to someone this morning about this, where we're going to look back and we're going to laugh about all the challenges that have been presented to us, and say, wow, do you remember the time that we experienced that? And be able to see it, because all it's about is, okay, my perspective's over here and I have these experiences to be able to refer to in that perspective versus before I didn't have those. But I have all this ancient wisdom and all of this kind of knowingness that, have I done this before, but maybe just in a different way? Mm. You know, have you and I had this conversation before, but just in a different time? And we tend to be so busy, caught up in all the external stimuli, that we aren't, you know, able to really grasp that moment in time, that silence. Yeah. You know, so beautiful. Well, you know, they say that Joseph of Arimathea actually caught the blood in a chalice. Mm-hmm. And carried it to a certain location. And the rumors are it could be in Glastonbury, it could be there's some castles that they've, you know, I mean, there's all kinds of rumors where it ended up. And apparently, so many rumors and so many stories, it reminds me of the Round Table, all the different renditions of things that have been written about it.
Yes.
So, for you, are you feeling that it was just an allegory? Is it just something that is just getting people to really get in touch with that soul seat?
Well, there's a couple layers to my answer to that question. The first is that not necessarily. It doesn't mean that didn't happen. I mean, I make no suggestions that Joseph of Arimathea didn't actually catch the blood of Christ.
Yeah.
But what I would say about that is that even if he did catch the blood of Christ, it's not the blood of this man that's, you know, man, God, whatever, avatar, mm-hmm. who's on the cross. It's not his blood in the chalice that gives the eternal life. It's the connection between the energy, the relationship, the love, and the truth of what that's really about that imparts the eternal life. And so if the grail is actually an object, the beauty is that the real beauty is that if it should, hopefully it's never found, or if it is found or has been found already, that it's just, you know, honored as a sacred relic, because the search itself for the grail,
yes,
is the value. Like the search, the looking for eternal life is the seeking inside of us for that nature of who we really are. And it creates a longing, you know, and this longing is a spiritual longing that opens up our soul to receiving divine love. Mm-hmm. When we fully are open to knowing this eternal part of ourselves, we want it, we want to know it, we seek for it, we look for it. The more we look, the harder we look, the more we find that everything around us, all external things, all the things that we may believe are the end goals, mm-hmm. they become fruitless. We realize that they're just dust. They're just flowing in the wind of time. And the more we realize that the real goal, the real chalice, is knowing ourselves, that all external attainments mean nothing compared to knowing the divine in us and to loving ourselves and to awakening that infinite love within us for all things, all that is passing, all that is moving through time.
Beautiful. Is there any, you know, I guess what would be the right word? You know, is there any significance to the fact that they've dictated that there's three people that reached the so-called finding of the grail, and that was Galahad, Percival, and Gawain? You know, what is your philosophy on that?
Well, trinities are magic everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, in all stories.
Absolutely.
You know, you could look at it as from an archetypal standpoint, you can look at it as finding the grail externally, like the grail without, right? There's this object and it's held by the grail knight and the grail castle, you know, and it's this thing, you know? And then there's the finding of the grail within, right? Which is another aspect of the grail, which is actually discovering, oh my God, our hearts are the grail. We must forgive. We must forgive for this betrayal. We must love. We must restore the masculine feminine balance. We must bring the kingdom back together. It is time, Arthur, you know? And then there is the third aspect of the grail, which is the infinite eternal grail. It is the grail that is both present in all things out there and also in all things in here. It's the great unifier, the Holy Spirit, so to speak, you know. And all three of those aspects are essential. And in Christianity, you know, it's interesting looking at the way the Trinity has played itself out and people's contesting of it, because it's like, well, it's supposed to be one God faith, but we're talking about three, you know, there's this Holy Spirit and then there's this Father person and then there's the Son person, but they're different. And it's like, well, yes, and, but you know, if you understand that there's actually metaphysical truth to this, there's a deeper truth that's being sought through this path, you see that it's the same person, it's the same being, and it's you, actually, because you're not inseparate from the Holy Spirit. You're not inseparate from fatherhood. You're not inseparate from being the Son exploring. Just like in, you know, Celtic and magical traditions, you know, there's the Virgin Mother and Crone. And it's not that there's a virgin goddess and a mother goddess and a crone goddess, you know, elder teacher, you know, goddess. they are one goddess. It is the divine feminine, and it is, it's one path of life, and outside of time, from the perspective of the eternal, they are, they're completely inseparate. You know, if you want to get mathematical and scientific and dimensional, you know, when you are able to see the fourth dimension from a higher perspective, and this is what the whole fifth dimensionality stuff is about, that gets totally spun out and poorly translated and becomes a bunch of new age fluff for the most part, in my opinion. Sorry to say for a lot of you who talk a lot about that. I love you. Thank you for doing it. But you know, from the fifth dimensional perspective, the whole idea is that you are then able to see clearly all four dimensions of space and time. It doesn't mean they go away. It doesn't mean you ascend to the fifth dimension and all of a sudden everything is gone.
Thank you.
You get to the fifth dimension and now you encompass every dimension below that, which means you're more aware of all of space and you're aware of time, and that in time you're able to see that there are cycles and patterns and synchronicities, and you begin to see the architecture of time from the fifth dimension. And that's
thank you for that. What I often say to people is, as we continue to raise our awareness, if you want to call it consciousness, our enlightenment, you know, they all have a little bit of a different connotation. Mm-hmm. But as you continue to go that route, it's like, I always think of like the eye of a fly. Mm. And what you're doing is you're adding more lenses to your eye so that you can see things in a much more expansive way. Mm. This is why I always say galactic versus anything else.
Yeah,
because the true definition of galactic is being able to expand the way you see everything. Hmm. So even though somebody might have a very limited view of something in your view, that's okay, because it's part of that lens. It's part of that eye.
Right.
It's exactly what you said. The threes, you've got past, present, future. Mm-hmm. And how many times do we all hear about, is there really a difference between the three? Because supposedly there is no time. If you go into that whole rabbit hole.
Yep.
Well, this is no different.
Nope.
Because everything ultimately has the core foundation of some sort of timeliness.
That's right.
And yet it doesn't.
That's right. And actually, you're pointing at an even deeper metaphysical secret, which I'd be happy to talk about a little bit.
Sure.
The nature of time and past, present, and future is completely, absolutely the same understanding as inner, outer, eternal, or masculine, feminine, divine. Right. It's actually all of those trinities are the same.
Yes.
And this is how. It really does come down to time. It really does, because when you look at it, you know, let's just start at the Big Bang. Let's start at, you know, a birthing point, you know, or not the Big Bang. You could say the ignition of our star, you know, if you don't believe in the Big Bang.
Right.
And at any beginning point, there must be an initial moment of something. In other words, there's something there. It's one thing, but then it becomes more than one thing. There's a relationship that's happening. It's expanded. It's igniting. It's exploding. It's whatever it's doing.
Focal point.
For that to happen, time has to pass. So, you know, is the first dimension that exists space? Well, no, because the first thing that must occur for there to be two things is time, right? There must be a moment and then another moment. But when there's time, that means there's space, mm-hmm. right? And this is why Einstein's greatest realization was that space and time are not inseparable. They're one thing. Whenever you have time, you have space, right? Yeah. And this is a beautiful realization from a scientific standpoint that links into our deeper understanding of ourselves from a metaphysical standpoint. So when you look at the past, right, here's another scientific insight. You look in at any object outside of you, like if you look at that tree over there, or you're looking, especially if you look into the stars, this becomes very evident that the more you look outside of you, the more you're looking into the past, things that have already happened. The further that something is away from you, the less influence apparently you have on it in the moment. Because, for example, you know, the further away something is, if you look into the stars, when you look at, you know, some of our nearest stellar neighbors, you're looking at stars that are, you know, light years away, you know, up to, if you're looking at the Pleiades, you're looking at 400 light years away, you know, 437-ish, something like that. And so you're looking at the Pleiades 437 years ago.
Right.
In other words, the light from the Pleiades has taken 400 years to reach your eyes. That means that the light that's touching your eye right now, you know, or the frequencies that are hitting your eyes from the Pleiades at this moment happened 400 years ago, right?
Yeah.
And so your perception of everything outside of you, and especially the further and further away you get out into the universe, the further into the past that you're looking.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what can you do with this stuff in the past? You know, you can't influence the Pleiades as it was 400 years ago, right? Consciousness isn't limited by that light speed barrier, but that's another topic.
Yeah.
But the fact is that when you're seeing an object, if you're seeing a tree way over there, the instance of the thing that you're seeing, you can't affect it. It's already done. By the time you see it, by the time you're receiving that information from a light's perspective, it's already passed, right? So by receiving light information, you're only receiving the past. Everything outside of you, from every, like, inch off of your body out to thousands of light years away to millions of light years away for other galaxies, you know, and all the way out to billions of light years away. All of that is outside of you. So you have one possible activity with that state that is right now being received by your body. And that is to receive it. In other words, it's receiving the past. It's receiving the external. It's the ultimate yin. You know, it's the divine yin. Mm-hmm. Is actually the acceptance of the past. In the I Ching, it's known as the receptive, and it's earth over earth. And it's just the nature of accepting all that is for all time and allowing all of that to become a part of you. Now, inside of your own being, the beauty of receiving the past is about actually accepting all the parts of yourself.
Yeah.
Because you can't go back, you know, at the 400 year ago moment, when you're looking at that, the Pleiades, the way they appear to you right now, you also existed 400 years ago, but you might have looked a little different. So when you're seeing the Pleiades right now, there is a part of you seeing it in the now at 400 years ago that also was still there. And as you go further out, you go further back. This is like galactic consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And as you expand your awareness into the galaxy, you're also expanding awareness through your lifetimes, through your soul's experience over all of this time that is inside of you, that you have to come to accept.
Love
you
it.
Have to come to receive.
I'm sitting here, I'm shaking my head, Adam, because that is how I work when I create my alchemy.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I work when I create galactic essences.
Nice.
Is I'm looking at not that individual as just a singular body.
Right.
I'm looking at their entire, what I refer to as a grid.
Right.
And I'm literally looking at, okay, on the, like, million miles away from their actual physical matter, something over there is causing havoc with the body here. Or it possibly is causing a miscommunication. Or it's causing a blockage where they don't want to accept it.
Right.
So very similar to the way I see my work. It's like I can totally relate with what you're saying. I think too, I mean, I remember long time ago, I was listening to a guy, I don't remember his name, and it just, I just went bing, you know, really, really resonated. And he was talking about how, you know, the father, the mother, the son, that triad was essentially what all of us go through within our own psyche, our own ego, our own mind, our own spirit.
Yeah.
Every one of those layers, if you want to call it, or dimensions of ourself, we are also kind of transitioning in and out all the time of the paternal archetypical flow versus the maternal archetypical flow versus the child who felt like, oh, I didn't get enough attention from my mother, or I didn't get enough direction from my father. And we essentially take action and speak and do things accordingly because of those three core, you know. I mean, it's fascinating when you see your life that way.
Indeed. And, you know, it's interesting looking at back at the, you know, the Father, the Son, the Holy Spirit. Well, okay, where's the feminine? Where's the Son come from? It's the Holy Spirit. So what we're talking about when we're talking about this flow of time, this river of time entering you, just like the rivers of blood connecting into your heart and the rivers of your lymphatic system cleansing through with bringing the waters in, we're talking about receiving yourself, right? And that's receiving the wisdom and the awareness of your eternal nature, because all you have to actually do is relax and remember. And if you relax and you open yourself to remembering, you can receive all that energy through all of time. And it is the grace. It comes with it. I mean, you know, you want to achieve superhero powers. You want to like do big things in the world. You want to be a great leader and be a great person. Well, just remember all the things you've already learned.
Yeah.
That's it. There's nobody out there that's going to teach you more than what you've already learned from your soul's experience through thousands of years.
Yeah.
Most of us, we're not willing to look at it with too much trauma, too much intensity, too much stuff we went through. So we don't look at it and we're stuck in the moment going like, dang, you know, and everything seems like a big challenge that we're having for the first time. But it's not like that. We've been through stuff that's way harder probably than what we are going through right now. And if we can accept it, you know, there's great wisdom in it. So the future side is the yang side. It's the father side. It's the part of us that's like, I want to generate. I want to create. I want to radiate. It's in the I Ching, it's the creative. Mm-hmm. And it's literally what is being resonated and projected out of us. Mm-hmm. So we are resonant conscious bodies, and all the time we're streaming a transmission out into space-time. Well, the act of that outward energy flow that we are projecting of our thoughts, of our energy, of our resonance out into the fabric of space, that is actually our acting on the future. Mm-hmm. Because as we project that energy out, there is going to be a point at some point in the future where that energy lands. In other words, where that energy becomes something, or it's going, you know, when I send out a pulse of a vision, it's influencing space-time, and space-time is going to reconfigure itself to align itself with the manifestation of my choice and my will and my idea. And this will, this power of choice, you know, is the father teaching. It's the, you must decide, you must choose, you must direct, you must go, you must bam. And so just as much as everything outside of us coming into us is the yin and the receptive and the divine feminine, everything going out of us, starting in our core and radiating out, is the yang, is the creative, is the divine masculine, is the father energy. And then in between there's this son idea, you know, this child, this this thing that is caught between receiving and creating. That's like in the world where they're, the purpose of the child is to somehow bridge the gifts of the mother and the father. You know, the purpose of the Christ, you know, is to be the bridge between man and God, you know, the purpose of the avatar. And so the nature of this being inside of us is the present moment. It is who we are. It is this intersection between everything that we've ever been and everything that we're going to be. And it's innocent. It's innocent in this moment because, you know, as much as you have been in the past, you can change all of that for every moment going into the future. You are at the event horizon. Nothing that has happened in the past is going to determine your future. You are that intersection point. You're the child. You get to choose. You can rebel against the past all you want. It's fine. In fact, you're supposed to, a lot of it, you know? And
the way of the Jedi.
And you got to accept the past too. Yeah. You know, the part of growing up, part of maturing in that space of the present moment is realizing that, you know, you got to give yourself some leeway. And you know, your parents, you know, you might rebel a lot, you know, when you're a teenager and stuff to identify who you are. But once you identify who you are, then you're not as rebellious again, because you realize there's some wisdom in boundaries and constraints and consciousness. And, you know, you realize your parents were actually a lot smarter than you think when, you know, you're having a challenge paying your bills and having a job that pays, and you realize, dang, how did mom and dad have a house, you know, and cars and have all their stuff together, you know, and deal with all of that? And it doesn't mean they were perfect, but they were able to do things that maybe you're still learning how to do.
Yeah.
And it's in the greater metaphysical wisdom, it's like you realize that you had some really, really good ideas in the past. And you've done some amazing things throughout your soul's history. If you can just receive that wisdom now, if you really can open up to learning from yourself and the visions that you have in the future, there's really no vision that's too big. There's really nothing that's out of your reach. You can create anything.
Yeah, and I also, I had kind of an aha the other day when I was researching some Templar information. Mm. Where, you know, they could have chosen a lot of different routes, but they chose to align themselves, I'm going to say align with quotations around it, with the Catholic Church.
Yeah.
And I kept thinking about that, you know, because none of what they did was not very well thought. It was always well thought out, is my whole point. Sure. And I thought to myself, well, Catholic means universal, you know. So that would be one thing. But the other thing is, the Catholic Church really reveres Mary. Mm. Okay. Now, we're not really thrilled with the way she's presented, you know, and the fact that they cast her to be some prostitute when she was an amazing high priestess and queen unto herself. But, you know, the bottom line is, it brings in that maternal, that loving, that nurturing, you know, all of like the Pietà in Italy and Rome. I mean, everything is about this cherished moment of the mother looking at the child, looking into the child and seeing the innocence and the purity of the child, even though the irony of it, everything that we know about the Vatican and everything and all that, you know, it's pretty disgusting. Okay. I mean, you've got these total opposites going on there. But if you just look at that right there, you know, no wonder we have been shut down as receptors, receiving and allowing and being open to receive. Because I deal with that a lot with my clients as well. Is there such a, what I refer to, there's like a wall around the heart energetically. and there's a wall around the bodies energetically that is preventing them. Yeah, it's like a protective mechanism, but it's preventing them from receiving. Like what you said, like really intermarrying with the tree or the wind or the rays of the sun on your face. Mm-hmm. And we're missing that because that's our divine birthright.
Yeah.
To be in oneness with nature. Yeah. Anyway, I got off the tangent. Sorry about that.
No, it's beautiful and it's well said. And yeah, there are definitely beautiful links there with Mary and, you know, the Rosicrucians, the Rose Cross, you know, order, which is like awareness of the rose, which is the divine feminine. It's symbol of the yoni, you know, or the vagina, and is like the birth canal, and is also, you know, a geometry that's all phi ratios, you know, which is a perfect model for our, as we talked about in a previous session, the five-pointed star and the connection with Nautilus shells and the vibration of the heart when it's in a state of love and the structure of the galaxy. I mean, there are deep, beautiful metaphysical insights, you know, hidden inside of all of these traditions.
Talk a little more about the five ratios and that kind of thing. Why is there so much significance to the number five? Why are so many of us seeing the 555? Like, yeah, where we turn. What is your stance on that?
Well, just like this little image on your wall here, you have the Chinese version of the five elements, it looks like.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is actually a six element system when you get into it, because what's happened, you have, yeah, there's always a point on top. There's always a spirit that unifies all of them. But the interesting thing about the five elements in the Chinese philosophy is that they're incorporating something that you don't see in the four element system, which is wood. And what is wood? Wood is life force, right? Wood is alive. It's actually growing and changing. And so wood in the four element series is actually the spirit point, because it's out of the four elements that life is born, right? But it's not just wood. Wood is just the concept for what happens when elements come together and create life.
Yeah.
So the five element system from the Chinese is actually a six element system that has a lot more to do with our emotional vibration and the charge in our different organs and organ systems. The power of five, you know, when you look at the power of five, you know, there's always four that are equal, right? And then you have the fifth, which is transcendent. So on the planet, within, you know, a lot of Native American traditions, you have the four directions and the self in the center pillar. You have in the cross, the four directions and the center, the cross in a circle, across, you know, however you want to draw it. In a pyramid, you've got the four corners and you've got the top point, you know, that's connecting them together. You have the four seasons, and the four seasons are elements of what happens on around the earth, you know. The four tarot suits, the four, you know, like I can go on and on and on. And all of these different aspects of the four elements of fire, air, earth, and water, or chalice and staff or spear and diamond or pentacle and sword or spade, all of these different representations are showing us about four different aspects of our physical nature in the universe. In other words, they're representing our physical experience. There's fire, which is hot. You know, there's water, which is condensation, cooling, fluid dynamics, you know, thermodynamics, fluid dynamics. Mm-hmm. And then you have gas, which is air and pressure and all of the different aspects of what happens in a gaseous physical state, you know. And then you also have solids like earth materials and solid materials, rock, wood, you know, glass, all of these things have a certain property.
Yeah.
And solids, as you learn in school, you know, solids, liquids, gases, plasmas, you know, are basically the four states that all physical objects move through and go through. And within that, even within our science that every kid learns in elementary school, the four elements are still there. We just call them solids, liquids, gases, and plasmas.
Right.
You know, but that is the deep spiritual nature of this physical world. But what's really, you know, missing in that science is the realization of the fifth state, which is actually the life that births out of these four elements. That in fact, when you have all these four elements in balance, they give rise to something new coming forth. It's where wood is born from. It's where spirit is present and has always been present and will be. You know, it's there in the Trinity too. It's there in duality too. You know, it's there in the one. So it's in the one, it's in the two, it's in the three, it's in the four, and of course, it's present in the five. Now, what's really interesting when you look at five from a mathematical and geometric standpoint, and you draw, you know, most of us learn how to draw the five-pointed star, you know, and we get a picture of what it looks like, and we have it in our heads, we know what it means, but what we don't realize is hidden inside that little symbol are some of the most fantastic mathematics of any of the symbols that we know about. Inside of that five-pointed star is hidden the golden mean spiral over and over and over again. It's fractally inside of it. It's like if you take, you know, one of those little star bars and you take the longer part of it, you know, to where it crosses here to the shorter part of it, you get what's often called the phi ratio, but phi is actually just a term for a ratio in physics, so it's right. Not actually appropriate. It's actually the golden mean ratio, which is a specific phi ratio. But this golden mean ratio is there, and the thing about the golden mean ratio is that what it means is that basically the ratio of the smaller piece to the larger piece is the same piece to the whole piece. And what that means is that there is a perfect fractal repetition of this ratio all the way down into infinity of the small, all the way out into infinity of the big. Now, this ratio is so valuable and so important to understand, because anytime you pick up a shell, you know, a nautilus shell, a shell on the beach, almost always it's made from the phi ratio, because it is a perfect ratio for expansion and compression. Mm-hmm. So even as a little snail or a slug or a crab or whatever is exuding its calcite material and is growing, it's naturally somehow growing, of course, at the perfect ratio for how a living object should grow. When you look at your hand, if I go like this with my hand, it's rough, you know, it's a little different on every person, but from your elbow to your wrist to here, this is the phi ratio, this to this is the phi ratio, this to this is the phi ratio, and this to this is the phi ratio. You are made of the spiral. You know, the length of your finger digits to your hands, to your arms, to your body. When you look at spiral galaxies, and this is one of the amazing phenomena I talk about in physics and my scientific talks a lot, is that, you know, when you look at a spiral galaxy, you have, even with a barred spiral galaxy with a bar in the middle, with the way the spiral pattern lays out, you end up with almost a perfect phi ratio spiral, the same as you have as shells on the beach. And then when you look at your DNA, it goes deeper, right? Because your DNA, the width of your DNA to one turn of the spiral of your DNA, or rather it's the other way around, one turn of the spiral of your DNA to the width of your DNA, as it usually is the phi ratio.
Amazing.
And when you look at the DNA from the top, It forms, the way that the bars rotate, it rotates through two patterns of five-pointed stars.
Wow.
It's a 10-pointed lattice when you look at it from the top. So even the way it's turning is aligned with the phi ratio. And specifically the golden mean and the power of the number five. And, you know, this is something that, and there's a reason why, you know, it's been deeply, deeply connected to the idea of beauty for centuries, because beauty is nature. You know, when a plant grows, it uses it uses Fibonacci sequences, which is one pattern that approaches the golden mean ratio, but also actually the golden mean ratio itself determines how leaves on a plant grow. Golden mean ratio determines a lot of our perception of beauty of each other's faces. How well proportioned is it? You know, the golden mean ratio is used in pretty much every old Gothic church, every Masonic building on the planet uses this ratio to do a lot of the construction elements because it's highly effective, highly strong, you know, it's structurally beautiful. Related to all of that, you know, it's connected to the planet Venus, because the planet Venus and Earth, from Earth, our relationship to Venus, Venus has a very, very specific pattern of how we perceive it moving around the sun. And when you chart this pattern, it forms a perfect five-pointed star. In other words, the points in which Venus and the Earth align as Earth and Venus are going around the sun. So Earth is traveling like this. I'll show you, I'll do it vertically so you can see the circle. So Earth is traveling like this and Venus is traveling faster, right? So it goes boom at the top, you know, and then boom right there, or it might skip one. I think it actually goes down to there. So it's like boom at the top and then comes down here, boom, that point in the five-pointed star. 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 And so it forms this exact five-pointed star, the relationship between the Earth and Venus. And it's absolutely exquisite. It's one of the amazing astronomical phenomena that, you know, astronomers have pretty much written off because it just sounds too metaphysical or whatever. But it has been known about for you know, millennia, and you wonder why Venus is regarded as the planet of beauty and the planet of, you know, God. Like, how did they know? How did they get this so long ago? And it gives you a hint at the fact that, you know, we were not stupid Neanderthals 1,000 years ago. Like, we were not, you know, a very, very dumbed down primitive society, you know, prior to the Ice Age, we actually had some serious intelligence, and a lot of that knowledge is still being recovered.
And we were so much more involved with the stars and the constellations, which of course expanded our consciousness even further, you know. Right.
Yeah, less streetlights.
I have always wanted to talk to you about this because it is without a doubt one of, I don't have it sitting right here with me. It's over there actually. But one of my favorite paintings ever since I was a little girl is the picture of Mary Magdalene. Her hair is all the way down to almost her ankles. Mm. And she's standing with her hair covering her privates on top of a scallop. And the ocean's behind her, and there's angels flying in on one end, and there's a woman on the other end that's pulled it right, and they're blowing the trumpets. What is your impression of that painting? How does that fit in, do you think, to the whole divine goddess coming alive again?
Well, it's full of mathematical and geometric symbolism. It's been studied a lot, and I'm sure there's some good resources. I don't know off the top of my head a site that does a good job with it, but if you search for geometry studies of art and search for the name of that painting, you'll find a lot of things, and it's it's true that almost all of the great masterpieces of Michelangelo, in particular, and even the work of Leonardo da Vinci, and you know, the whole Ninja Turtle crew, all of them used the fire ratio, you know, massively.
Yeah.
Not just the fire ratio, but all of the divine harmonics, the four, the five, the six, the seven in particular. The understanding that each one of these geometries contains some nature of the secret of the universe mm-hmm. is something that we see all over the place. But, you know, you might get some of that in art school. You know, they might tell you like, yeah, they use these geometries because they look pretty and they're proportional, you know, and they create balance using the six-pointed star and whatever. But what they're not telling you is that there is metaphysical power inside of those structures. In other words, they literally affect your consciousness and they affect the fabric of space-time. You can't help it. When you see something that uses the fire ratio, it's innate to you because part of you vibrates with a recognition of it. You feel it. You know it as part of yourself. Going back to the Grail, there's a really amazing study that was done by the Institute of Heart Math, which we may have talked about before, but the study was that basically what happens when you study the heartbeat in different states of emotion, and you take, you know, the peaks and the troughs, you know, of the wave of as it compresses. So it's like boom, boom, and it goes down, boom, boom, and it goes down. And you take where the peak is and where each one of the little peaks are at as the wave kind of vibrates out to nothing. And you look at the mathematical ratios of that. What they found was that when people were in a state of anger, it collapses super fast. So the heart doesn't resonate much. You know, it's like, you know, when you're sad, it kind of like, you know, it's like this long kind of uneven bouncy wave. But they found that when people were in a self-described state of compassion or love or in a deep meditative state, when they felt total peace, their heartbeats wave, the ratio of how the waves actually compressed got closer and closer and closer to the phi ratio and the golden mean ratio. Which means that the heart was starting, and they said that in the highest states of someone being in love with someone else and saying they really feel their heart just completely open, they feel like they're totally in love, and the really deep meditative states also, they found that the heartbeat's wave almost doesn't even stop resonating. It goes down by the fire, you know, the golden mean ratio, but it goes down smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. So literally it's like compressing the energy of the big wave down all the way into infinitely small waves. So it's literally channeling the energy of one heartbeat into the next heartbeat, into the next heartbeat, into the next heartbeat. And there's a guy named Dan Winter who did an incredible illustration of what this wave looks like around the body. And when you look at the horizontal waveform of it, you know, it comes out and it goes up like this, and it goes up like this, like a big chalice, you know, and it continues. But if you look at it, it looks like ripples in water or all of these cups, you know, that you are holding in the field of your heart. And so, in Dan Winter's work, he goes off about the Grail and the fire of the Grail, the P-H-I-R of the Grail, and the heart as being this Grail chalice, this element of being that that actually has the potential to connect to our eternal nature and our eternal life.
You know, I was wondering too, I think it's called Venus de Milo, now that I'm remembering it. So again, there's that Venus connection, but there is a story that goes all the way back to a time when the Ascended Master Sanat Kumara was sitting and contemplating for 3 days. And he was in a garden, and he was very, very sad. And what supposedly had been, I don't know, some sort of decree or decision was being made about this planet and the demise of this planet and how it was being looked upon as it was probably just going to implode because of the destruction and the falling away from grace. And he was supposedly the story, you know, hopefully I'm not totally destroying it, but the story goes that he spent 3 days in contemplation as to what could he do to assist in gathering all of the assistance throughout the solar system and beyond to help all of those that were on planet Earth and to assist in the, you know, what we're going through. And so there's that Venus connection. I mean, I've always been fascinated, like on a galactic realm, what's the true connection between Earth and Venus?
Yeah.
Because they're both represented as a feminine energy.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I've always wondered about that. Well, where's the third one?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Well, you know, and Earth is like the present. It's the sun. It's the child in a way, you know, and you have it traveling between Venus and Mars and this kind of masculine feminine polarity, which is seen in the geometric dynamics and the kind of energies of these planets. But you know, the, when you look at, the astrological patterning within just the solar system alone, you see that there's kind of layer after layer after layer of trinities going on.
Yeah.
You know, there's like the sun, moon, earth, there's the Mars, Venus, earth relationship. And then as you go further, there's Saturn, Jupiter, earth relationship, you know, the nature of the, like, this control and this freedom and expansion. And then there's the Uranus, Neptune, polarity, which is like Iranian, like mind, thunderbolt, you know, and the Neptunian deep, 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 deep ocean. And it's like, as you go out in the solar system, you see that these polarities get even more and more and more pronounced and at higher and higher levels of consciousness, you know, and
well, even Adam, even if you look at the sky at night, you can see gazillions of pyramids.
Right.
And they're like, they're almost perfectly formed.
Yeah.
All over the place.
Sure.
Once you see that, you don't see it any, it's almost like you can't not see it once you've seen it.
Yeah. Orion's Belt's one of my favorite ones. When you look at Orion's Belt, and you realize that, you know, when you look at its structure and it sort of forms a box with the two lower kind of hip stars, then the three stars in the belt. If you just allow yourself to just relax and look at it as being 3D, you can see where the top point is, and you can see that the other points are down on the base. And so it forms the base of this pyramid, and there's a top point on it, and the whole dimensionality of the structure opens up. And then you see the three little stars that are his sword, and they look literally like they're like a you know, like landing lights, you know, at an airport, like ding, 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 like, there you go, enter here, you know, like go into this spot. And I've seen many, many, many ships actually flying out of that.
Really? So,
yeah, totally. Just like right there is where this, you know, little shooting stars will come out and turn or whatever will come from. And there's a few different like Stargate templates, you know, I think that are spots where our relationship light-wise, our relationship of the Earth to the relationship of where the stars are positioned relative to the Earth form these holographic spaces that are, you know, good entry and exit points, you know, and that's related to the energies on the Earth too.
I was just going to go there. Like, how do you feel that the Holy Grail and the journey and the pursuit of the Holy Grail, how does that relate to Orion's Belt? You know, because there's so much about the Eye of Horus, the Orion's Belt, I've even read stuff about Cygnus, that being a very, very key entrance and exit point to this supposed matrix. I'd love to hear what you think about that.
Yeah, well, I'll talk about Cygnus for a second first, and work my way back the other way. So when I was, I don't know, I guess it was probably about 10 years ago, maybe a little bit less. I was traveling around the continent. I had just done, I literally drove all the way to the West Coast and up the West Coast with a friend of mine, Brittany Jade, and we were doing ceremony at each one of these nodes around Turtle Islands, in Albuquerque and Phoenix and LA and San Francisco, at Shasta and Portland and Seattle and Vancouver on Sunshine Coast. And when I say ceremony, I don't mean with any medicines or anything like that, but I mean with the sword and the chalice and doing prayer and doing energy work on the grid, and witnessing some just absolutely fantastic miracles happen and coming up against massive challenges as well in the field, and noticing the like system reacting to our magic work and like trying to, you know, respond or react. And but as we worked our way up through the chakras of the West Coast, you know, more, it got a deeper, more and more ancient information was coming in, and also higher and higher levels of consciousness were being reflected back to us. You know, I'm making this a little bit longer story, but I'll get to.
Oh, that's great.
And, you know, it culminated in the Sunshine Coast in DC, where we were actually, we went to this party and it was like, it's difficult to explain, but all of this elven karma from the age of Atlantis, like all of these people in this place, in British Columbia, which is called the Sunshine Coast, which actually is beneath, right, we were right beneath a mountain called Mount Elphinstone.
Oh, wow.
These people, they're elves. I mean, they are some of the most incredible artists and artisans and nature ecological warriors. They travel around the world and they teach in these areas, and they do all of these amazing metamedia experiences. Crystal and Spore is an example. Zavi's done a lot of his work up there, if you've ever heard his name, as an artist, X-A-V-I. And on and on and on. I can give you lists. The Green Samurai group. There's all of these people there. And what we really saw arising was this old elven karma, where all these elves were having this incredible party, and then it got raided by all of these drunken humans who came in from all over the place. And it was like this beautiful spiritual zone. And then all of a sudden there was all these like drunken, like hillbilly vampire, like people that were going around, and all the elves were like scared and hiding in the woods. And it was like, it was this deep, intense thing. And Brittany and I were there, and we had to basically go and infiltrate to the heart of the fire and sit across from each other at the fire and do the cleansing work that was necessary to clear the fields and the karmic square that was going on, or the intensity that was going on between these two groups of people. And we were able to clear it and resolve it before dawn. And it turned, the whole place, you know, became beautiful and peaceful. And there was lots of resolution and lots of amazing things that happened at that experience. But that was like a guiding point, you know, and there were other events like that all the way up to BC. And then we went up into Canada through the Yukon and met with this group of Indigenous youth that I had helped to organize to do this prayer run for world peace. And we were running from Vancouver, BC, up to Eklutna, Alaska. And so because of this experience with the elves, we missed the first days of this run, but met up with them and continued to run with them all the way, you know, the rest of the way to Alaska. And And that journey was, it was a purifying journey. It was a deeply cleansing journey. And it helped me to kind of, as I went all the way up to Alaska, it was like working out these kind of ancient fields in myself and running off of these karmas and clearing layers and layers and layers, and yet still seeing them come up more and more. You know, Orville Looking Horse's wife, Paula Horn, said to me at one point that I reminded her of her ex-husband because I was having all these Star Nation things, and it scared her because she didn't want me to end up like him, you know, and get lost in the galactic stuff. And it really hurt my heart. It was deep because she'd just given me an eagle feather for my work and then told me this, and it broke my heart because I felt like she didn't trust me, you know. But I knew that I had to integrate this galactic work.
Sure.
That I, you know, but I also made a commitment to myself not to get lost in it. And so we came back down from Alaska, and after the 10th or 11th World Peace Prayer Day ceremonies, and made our way down to Colorado where the Rainbow Gathering was happening. And there's lots of other pieces to this story, but lots of my memories of Avalon were coming in through a lot of this journey back down. And Brittany was having her memories from that time, and she was remembering me from that time and sharing with me lots and lots of things that she was remembering and seeing, which I had to accept on an even deeper level, because, you know, at this point I'd had many different people remember me and share with me pieces of their memories of me from that time. And I had also shared with many other people my memories of them from that time. And so it was a lot of integration work, but this last little leg to Colorado was a super deep time of acceptance. And I remember driving to the Rainbow Gathering and the sunrise coming up while I was driving. Nice. And the rainbows in the sky. And I just felt the banners being raised, you know, and the dragon banner and the nature of this great work to be done being called forth. And at that Rainbow Gathering, one night I looked up at the stars and I looked right at these two brilliant star points that were in the galaxy, like in the Milky Way galaxy. And I saw that the Milky Way galaxy was bright and cloudy between them, and then basically tapered off. And there was this dark place between these two bright light points, these two bright stars. And I looked at it and I relaxed my vision. And all of a sudden I saw that these two bright stars were eyes, and they were eyes of these two galactic creatures, these galactic beings. And on one side was this massive dragon body. I mean, nearly perfectly articulated in the stars, because we were way up in the high Colorado plateau with absolutely clear night, zero moisture in the air. And I could see every detail of the structure that was a dragon on one side, and the other eye I could see was a phoenix. And I saw the bird phoenix structure coming off of the other side. And I immediately had all these downloads about Shehaley and the nature of the phoenix and the dragon and the dragon's lineage and the phoenix as being the rebirthing element of that, the masculine and the feminine, and how, you know, a lot of these ancient Taoist wisdom points all talk about the phoenix and the dragon and are actually downloads of the Shehalian truth that we die in the fire and we are reborn. We die in the fire and we are reborn. And the dragon is the bloodline and the energy of the continuum that connects us between every one of our lives. It is actually the embodiment of our continuity through time. And for me, and for, you know, a lot of us that are galactic travelers, truly the understanding of the dragon has been the key that has connected me through all of my lifetimes, all the way back to as far back as I can remember.
Sure.
And all the way back to my lifetime as a dragon in Andromeda. And so the connection the connection there was extremely deep and potent. And these stars that I saw are part of Cygnus. And they are actually the body of Cygnus. It's the head and the tail of Cygnus. And then there's the two wing stars, and they form like a little pyramid structure. But there, you'll notice on a clear night that the galactic cloud of stars has a gap between the two. It's dark between the two in the cloud. And so it looks like these two beings looking at each other. So,
and isn't there, there's actually like a kind of a cross too, when yes. you look at the core stars around it. So
yes.
I've always been fascinated with that star system.
Yeah,
that's fact, good. Remind me, I should add it to this video. We were able to capture a picture.
Mm.
And it was, it's so well defined. And it's literally, it's a dragon standing up, and yeah. then it's a lion.
Mm.
So there's like the dragon and the lion, and oh, it was just amazing picture that
Beautiful.
We got caught on film. Well, we have about 15 more minutes, and one of the other questions that I thought I would ask you is, how does the Fisher King fit into all this? Do you know much about that? I mean, that, you know, because that's related to Percival's story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, there's a few different lines around the Fisher King, and I honestly, it's not something I've explored in a lot of depth.
Okay. No problem.
So I don't have a lot to say about it besides the fact that there's definitely a connection there with the linking between the nature of the Piscean energy and the Christ consciousness, the representation of Jesus Christ as being the fish, and sort of signaling the age of Pisces, and the nature of the Piscean way of there being, you know, kind of a guru or a leader or a someone who is basically a guiding light for the rest of the school of fish, you know, but that all of it is about the whole school coming together and reaching its potential. All of these are ancient metaphysical and astrological symbols and signs. Sorry about that. And so, you know, but what we see is that there's a core teaching of that has come through, especially in the time of Avalon, where, you know, there's a reason for a king, for example. And in that time, the field that was trying to be generated couldn't be generated without someone holding that spot and holding that position. The age of Pisces in a way kind of required it. And so a lot of the essence is that, you know, there must be a leader. It must be some leader. And someone has to actually take this role of being this king or this guru or this teacher during that time in order to facilitate the rest of the field unifying mm-hmm. and coming together. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a little different now. I mean, we've moved into the age of Aquarius, and so now it's essential that that point of leadership gets distributed.
Yes. It
creates an even more well-distributed circle. But, you know, the wisdom of Pisces cannot be forgotten. It still takes each individual or one individual to stand forward and stand for something. And, you know, the wisdom in Percival is about really seeing that if a leader that is in charge, is in place, cannot lead, then someone else must take that spot. In other words, during the dark times when Arthur was feeling betrayed and the stuff was hitting the fan on all levels, and it was getting really, really intense and really bad, and the land was getting really sick, you know, Percival was one of the key leaders to like take charge and to help people manage, maintain, reorganize, you know, and you know, through the process of the seeking of the Grail and the restoration of the Grail, you know, Percival's actions were such that were the actions of a king, were the actions of a man who had stepped into his full leadership and help to restore the balance of the kingdom. So it's a deep story of wisdom. You know, when a king cannot be king, another king must arise.
And you know, and I want to add to that, that what you call the New Age fluff, which there's plenty of that out there.
Yeah.
One of the things that I feel very strongly about is, although we're moving into the age of Aquarius, we're still shifting from the age of Pisces. And that does not mean that we don't need or require through the shift leaders.
Yeah.
The key is with an S, and in that leadership, those that are leaders, they recognize the leadership abilities in all the others around them.
That's right.
It's not that they hold themselves at such a different, higher level than those that surround them. They recognize that everyone has their role. In fact, you know, I just remember my father was a fighter pilot. And when he flew out to Vietnam, I said to him one day when I was a little girl, I said, you know, Daddy, aren't you worried about your plane? I mean, you have to completely depend on this other these other individuals that do all the maintenance and this and that and the other. I mean, basically, you know, if it weren't for them, you would easily blow up, you know? And
yeah.
And my father said, he says, oh no, it's not just the mechanic that's working on the machine, on the engines. It's the individual that is purchasing the parts.
Yeah.
And it's the individual that is handling the paperwork to make sure that the parts that were supposed to be ordered are the correct parts. And it's the person that provides the, you know, and he just showed me. I mean, it's like every person's position is ultimately of a leadership if they so choose to take it that way.
Right.
And we all need to recognize that we all have our own individual talents. This word leader has become so distasteful.
Yeah.
And in fact, it's one of the most beautiful things, as long as we're not staying in that space of, oh, they are this and we are not,
mm-hmm.
you know, where there's that division.
Yeah.
Now we're going into leadership as a round table.
Right.
Where we are all leaders sitting at that round table.
Right.
So.
Yeah. There's some really good, modeling of these kinds of things coming from some of the people that are really strongly enmeshed in the world of our perception of like, oh, celebrity, you know, like they're way up here and we're down here, you know, or like these, you know, these world leaders or these, you know, famous people or the pilots, you know, those great pilots, like the people that we hold up high because we acknowledge and their work is, it's obvious, you know, whatever thing they've done, because they're in the front of the view, they're in the front of the eye, you know, they're right there. You know, you look at, and Angelina Jolie is my example. You look at Angelina Jolie on screen and you're like, oh my God, like she is just so amazing. You know, this is an epic woman. Like, look at her act, you know, and amazingness. But in a movie, like, she didn't write the script, you know, she didn't set up the scene, she didn't design the scene, she didn't direct the scene, she didn't do the lighting, she didn't do the video, she didn't do the post-production, she didn't do, I mean, the list of people that we just glance over
in a
movie is ridiculous. I mean, you can sit there for 10 minutes and just watch names go down the screen for all the people responsible for that moment, you know, where you have this amazing experience of someone. And someone like Angelina Jolie has done such an incredible job being this icon, this beacon, but then going down and working with youth in the freaking, you know, in the some of the most challenging places in the world, to work with hungry kids and to help create organizations that can help support them. And now she's becoming a teacher. Okay. You know, she's showing people that, like, it's not about this beacon here. It's about the people who do the little actions throughout the rest of the system that really can make the difference. And when you do have that big beacon starlight, shine it on the things that need to be seen.
Absolutely. You know,
show people.
And share it.
Share it.
Share, yes. You know, be like the sun and yeah. shine your light and expect nothing in return.
Yeah.
I just love that.
Yes.
Shine your light.
Ching.
Yeah. So, okay, question. How is the whole, you know, when you get into the chalice, and I noticed you called your new workshop or whatever you want to call it, you called it Sword and the Chalice.
Yeah.
So what exactly were you trying to depict by choosing the sword with the chalice?
Well, I mean, on the obvious level, there's the masculine and feminine, you know, there's the
yeah, but you're not obvious, darling.
Yes, well, you know, those layers.
You always have all these, like, very deep angles going on.
Yes, there's layers, definitely. I'm an onion. Yeah, and in this case, definitely, it's not just that simple. But it is very, very important to me to honor and acknowledge the nature of masculine leadership and masculine nature of being, as well as feminine leadership and feminine nature of being. And they are so essential to bring together and to realize that we are both of those aspects in ourselves. It doesn't matter if you're in a men's circle and you don't have any women sitting with you or not, you cannot have a sustained circle unless you have feminine energy and feminine representation. If everyone's trying to direct and trying to be and trying to create and be masculine, it's absolutely not going to work. You can't have a council. And so the feminine is needed. And the same thing in any circle of women. Even it doesn't matter, you know.
I totally agree with you.
You have to have masculine energy. Yeah. So some woman has to take the leadership. Someone has to help kind of direct and guide where you guys are going to go or what topics you're going to cover or what you're going to do. Otherwise, you're just going to sit in the feminine and it's just going to become stagnant.
Mm-hmm.
It's cool, you know, just like with masculine, it's all going to become too intense and blow up and become fiery and just like and aggressive, you know.
Yeah.
And so there's a deeper wisdom in this sword and chalice work, which is understanding that, you know, you need the sword at times to pierce through the veils, to like direct, to slice, to like get clear about what it is that you're doing and where you're going and refine and forge and hammer the steel and fold the steel and like temper it, you know, create something that's a tool and use that tool with honesty and integrity and honor, because that tool that you create, whether it's a company, whether it's an organization, whether it's a group, a team, you can misuse that all day long. You can hurt people with that. But if you use it appropriately, you can guide people with that. You can protect people with that. You can be in service to people through that sword. Similarly with the chalice, you know, it's tough to catch the water that's flowing between your fingers. You know, the river of abundance, the river of energy, the river of emotion, you know, is flowing through us all of the time. And it's difficult for us to put that energy of all of that flowing magic to use unless we have a cup. And the cup requires a different kind of forging. It requires, you know, a shaping and an honoring and an acknowledgement of how it's going to meet your lips and how you're going to hold it and how you're going to relate with it and connect with this object and how you're going to pass it to someone else. And this object can then, you know, carry water. It can hold that field of abundance and sustain it and actually sustain life through the carrying of that abundance on from person to person to person to person to person.
Beautiful.
So that's the magic of the feminine, is it can sustain a field and allow it to continue doing its service and to do its work in the world.
Beautiful. And I would also add the sword represents so much about the mental body, the ability to use our mind and break the dynamic and the paradigm that we've had for quite a long time of, I'm just going to get by.
Yeah.
I'm just going to do this half-ass. I'm just going to be this because, you know what, I'm not really doing what I want to do and I'm not really happy with what I'm doing. So I'm just going to kind of float by. And that is all being very much challenged right now. And with the chalice, which is all about the water and the emotions and the connecting of the heart, we're also being challenged with that, with, okay, well, as we connect with the heart, we expand the way we feel so that we aren't in a paradigm of such restrictive responses of, you know, hey, you're doing something, unless they're hurting someone, okay? But if you're saying something that I don't agree with and it's triggering feelings within me, then that mind, that sword chalice, mind-heart connection is really, we're being called to react to that differently, to expand the way that we feel about that, to be able to say, wow, maybe I can glimpse something new out of what they think. You know, maybe I can kind of tweak the way I see things as long as I'm expanding and serving the all, you know, and we're being called so hugely to drop all of these boxes, you know, and go back to the basics of, like, when you're talking, I always see the infinity sign, you know, just, or the spiral, just, you know, in and out. And the other thing about femininity is adaptability.
That's right.
We are constantly adapting to our environment, not through these paradigms that have been written for us, that have been rammed down our throats. It is now time for us to become a leader, meaning take the leadership position, blaze the trail, and question, well, you know what? Even though I've been taught that that's like what my mom and dad think, that's not working for me. This is what's so incredible. As one of my mentors told me, the amount of information that we're sharing on the planet right now, the amount of whistleblowers, the incredible amount of sacred information that is being shared is like at an all-time high.
Yeah.
And we're still here. We're not getting blown up and thrown in concentration camps and, you know, being taken down and, you know, mass executions like it's happened over and over and over in the past.
Yeah.
We're not going to do that. If I have anything to do with it, it's not going to happen. If you have anything to do with it, it's not going to happen.
There's so many of us united.
And the thing is people just, you know, yeah, there's a lot of that fear porn on the internet, but what about all that hasn't happened that was doomy and gloomy?
Yeah.
You know, we are clearly, as Adam has said, we are clearly creating our new Camelot. Mm-hmm. This is us. We're creators. We're the creators. We're manifesting right now as we speak.
Yeah.
How cool is that? So,
it's pretty epic.
Oh my God. It's such an incredible time to be alive. It really is.
It is. It is. You know, I have so much more hope. You know, I thought leading up to 2012, we were probably going to have to just like,
that was scary.
Completely supersede the existing governing systems entirely.
Yes.
And just toss the old model and just completely go distributed. And we probably still will at some point in our maturation cycle. But like for the first time in my life, I look at the whole political world right now and I have so much hope. It's amazing. I look at the fact that for the first time ever, all the corruption is so well exposed. I mean, you can just see it. I mean, look at Trump. He's like the ultimate, he's shining the ultimate light on the shadow.
Totally.
It's unbelievable. It's like, oh, right, there it is. There's the shadow. Like, let's hate these people and let's build a wall and screw these guys and whatever and blah, blah, blah. And he's like serving this incredible purpose. And then you look at Hillary.
Oh,
and it's like, here's the same old game over and over again.
It's so
old. Wife, she's related to the same people, the same people that put them in power, and as the same dark secrets is investigated by the FBI right now, like on, and it's escalating. It's like, okay, so the media is saying it's between Trump and Hillary, right? And yet all of the information about how corrupt and how off both of those candidates is for the first time totally public.
Yes.
I mean, if you even just look a little bit past Fox News, even on CNN, you see here's the corruption, here's the stuff and whatever, but they're still pumping it because they're still trying to maintain the old game.
Yes.
And yet then you have, you know, Bernie Sanders, Democratic socialists, you know, who's like, actually, we don't have to raise taxes and we can give everybody free college and we can actually like cover people's medical expenses. We have the money to do that as a government. Since we are taking billions of dollars in tax money every year from people, how about we build a couple less bombers and we put a couple more people to school and make a little bit more intelligence, you know? And it's like such this clear, piercing ray of light of truth. It's incredible. It's a sword. And it's like, it goes right into the heart of this like raw system of like, but you know, he's too left wing, so he can't do it or whatever. And it's like,
I got to interject something before we go. And yeah. I never watch mainstream news. And yeah. Yesterday I was flipping on something and the mainstream news was, they were showing a clip of Hillary versus Trump.
Yeah.
And she had the audacity to say, that he is too thin skinned. He's so thin skinned that he will create an act of war because of it. And I thought to myself, oh my God, that's the end of her.
Yeah.
But it's beautiful.
Yeah.
Because it's the end of her. She is literally, if anybody digs just even a little deeply,
yeah,
they're going to see that Hillary's up to her eyeballs in war creation.
Yeah.
I just looked at it and I was like laughing.
It blows my mind because I actually have quite a lot of friends and colleagues in big leadership positions that are Hillary supporters. And, you know, I've had to kind of like, you know, I don't like getting political. It sucks. Yeah. But I have to ask them the question, you know, and it's a real simple question. Do you know that she's a board member for Monsanto?
Yeah.
Like, okay, if yes, do you understand what Monsanto is doing to our food supply and production and regarding buying and GMOs and stuff?
Yeah. Heavily involved in GMO.
So you're aware of that then, yes. Good. Do you also know where her campaign funding comes from? Okay. So if you know where her campaign funding is coming from, do you trust those organizations? All right. I mean, it's a very, very simple A to Z thing. It's like, okay, you have the most corrupt, like the one of the biggest, like, abusive environmental companies on the planet, one of the companies responsible for probably more deaths, more environmental destruction,
Monsanto.
More irresponsible genetic manipulation, more buyouts of the FDA and other groups than ever before, and one of the largest lobbying companies that's pretty much about as evil as you can possibly get for any company on the planet. And you have a woman who's a board member for that company who's saying that she's going to do all this good for us, right?
Right.
And she's running for fucking president. Do you want Monsanto in the presidential seat? That's my question.
Yes.
If not, then you're insane to vote for Hillary.
Right.
And I'm not saying vote for Trump because I'm not.
No.
It doesn't even matter. But like,
he's got a plethora of disgusting stuff.
Yeah.
Neither one of these people are conscious or have a conscience.
Yeah. And if your problem with Bernie is that you're afraid he's going to jack up taxes and we're going to become a socialist communist country, well, every single thing that he suggests that we do, if you look at the countries in Europe that have already done that, like Denmark, for example, they have one of the best company policies in the world. They have some of the most successful companies in the world. Have you ever heard of IKEA? You know, like, yeah, they know how to do business. Okay. And they have the best schools in the world, number one schools in the world. And actually all of the Nordic countries that have implemented these tactics have the best schools in the world. They have the highest happiness quotient in the world. If you haven't seen Michael Moore's movie, Where to Invade Next, go watch it. It's just awesome.
I've been meaning to watch that. I'm going to definitely check that out.
You know, Michael Moore, he used to irritate me a lot because he's just, you know, he's got a little, like, you know, disgruntled guy thing.
Yeah.
But in this movie, he really gets humble and he just goes and he asks people questions, and it is beautiful. It is definitely worth watching.
Like I said, it just goes to show you that there, you know, I had a big aha this morning when I was tapping in, as I say.
Yeah.
And I realized that there's so many of us. There's like little pockets of soul families and groups working together. And I was being shown that there's like a whole targeting, like a circle of there's these circles, and we're all basically working towards exposing the ultimate circle that needs to be exposed and toppled. We're all doing it in our own different way. And again, do we have the leadership qualities within ourselves to be able to be okay that person over there, I don't really like his personality, he's not really lining up with me, I don't really agree with his convictions, but he is reaching that part of the public.
Right.
And that is needed. You know, you can't all be Adam Apollos and expect like everybody on the planet to resonate with that high of an enlightenment and frequency.
Right.
It ain't gonna happen.
Thanks.
Well, seriously, I mean, it's just the way the world runs. So anyway, tell everybody again your websites.
Sure. Yeah. So my main online academy is the Guardian Alliance, which you can just search for Guardian Alliance and it comes right up, or go to guardian.is, guardian.is. And the event that we're hoping to do in the beginning of July is the Sword and the Chalice. And that's at swordandthechalice.com. And there's links to it from my other sites as well. And I'm going to be relaunching adamapollo.com soon, so keep an eye out for that. It's needed a rebirth for a long time, and I'm going to do adamapollo.info too, because that one's pretty much, most of that site was built, designed, and written over 10 years ago, almost all of it. So, it's time for that one to get a rebirth as well. So those are some things in the works. But before that happens, one of my next major goals is launching the new Galactic Connection site with Alexandra Medors. And we are very close. It's getting tight. Just waiting on a couple final organizational pieces. And then we'll have a new site for you guys to explore. And thank you for being here and joining us on these adventures. I'm really honored to be here with you, Alexandra. Thank you.
You too. And everybody needs to be patient because it is a different format. You're going to have to get used to finding things in a different location, but it is actually way easier. So to maneuver, that's been the big deal for me, is trying to make sure that whatever page you land on, you can get anywhere else you want to go. You know, that there are doorways to get to other locations. So, yeah, we're really excited. We're getting very close with that. And I will be launching my new Essence series called Removing the Veil. That's coming right around the corner. Very excited about that, is Removing the Veils. It's an 8 Galactic Essence series. It's very, very powerful. I received it by the grace of the Company of Heaven, if you want to call it that. And as always, just keep checking out the implant removal series with the soul alignment and the DNA sequencing. It is literally life-changing, and the testimonials will prove that all over the world. We continue to bring people through a transformation like none other. So continue to check that out. We have a whole bunch of new stuff coming, but at this time we're running really late, so stay tuned. Thanks for all your support. It does make a difference. Please continue to hold space for our websites, for our emails. You know, we do receive a lot of interference. There's just no question about that because of we do a lot of good work, okay? And we've got some powers that are still fighting that on the, air astral plane. So please continue to send your love and your light and your power to help us stand strong. And thank you, Adam, as always. And everybody, we'll talk to you later. We're going to do another series. If you have any other like really cool topics regarding this trail of Camelot, Knights Templar, Round Table, etc., feel free to drop in an email or two to me. You can send an email to admin@galacticconnection.com. Okay, take care. We love you, honor you, and we also honor the leader in you. Talk to you soon. Bye.